We tend to always get a lot of questions about military and about SOFA visas and about financing through SOFA visas. So I'm going to, I think it's a very short answer. So I'm going to get Emil to answer that.
No, already no. Sorry, guys. No.
But SOFA, people on SOFA visas are the same as people who are non-residents in terms of if you have the cash, you can buy whatever you like, mostly, I think.
So what actually was the question?
How can SOFA members buy a home without residency card? And how can a foreigner open a Japanese bank account? And how to find a contractor to help rebuild a home in Japan? So, I mean, but it all comes down to SOFA, doesn't it? It's not really a visa thing. It's a cash thing, right?
Yep. And actually, right now, what I've
heard... if you actually... Even if you were in Japan as some on some sort of visa, for example, even working holidays visa, and you left Japan and you had an active bank account at that point, they'll close it out, they'll block, they'll freeze the account, and then you have to come here to sort it out. I was just actually helping one guy with this that was here during COVID. He was on working holidays visa, had a bank account, had money in it. Then he tried to access the bank account few months back because he was like, oh, I still have some money sitting in the account. And basically the bank account was frozen and they told him, well, you are not a resident in Japan anymore. So, you know, if you want to do something about it or even if you want to withdraw the money and close the account, you actually have to come here. Otherwise, your money is sitting here. So careful with that.
And that's not actually a bank rule. It's a regulatory rule. So to prevent money laundering, the financial regulator has said, if you are not a resident, you cannot maintain a bank account. So if you are here on a work visa, you are able to open a bank account, but that's why the banks ask you for a copy of your residency card. They know when your residency expires. And then towards the end of that, the bank will send you a letter saying, please renew your or update your residency card. So, and if you don't do that, then they could freeze your bank account and you need to come back and do some paperwork in order to close it up. So for the SOFA people, status of status of forces agreement, you don't even have a residency. Like there's no jumi-hyo for those people. So unfortunately, on the camera, yeah, sorry guys, it's difficult to even open a bank account, let alone get a mortgage. I think we've got a speaker tomorrow who will talk about foreign non-residents getting mortgages, and I think largely you have to open up a corporate entity, Japanese corporate entity, and local entity is the one that gets the financing. So that's on tomorrow for that talk. But from my experience with typical home loans, you cannot do that. If you do want to purchase in cash, that is possible. As a non-resident, you can still wholly own a Japanese asset if it's a cash purchase, but there's no financing. Yeah, move on.
Which locations are the hottest demand for both Akia at the same time for Airbnb? Do you have like a filter that does like Airbnb demand versus the Akia?
No, we're working on zoning right now, which I know is not like a one-to-one mapping to, yes, you can do Minpaku here or not, but step in the right direction. We found like a pretty accurate government website that has a geospatial zoning maps of Japan. So we're hoping to come out with some zoning maps in the future.
WAG2Map, is that the one?
Okay.
WAG2Map.
Not the one. Another thing we are doing with Airbnb, though, we know there's AirDNA, Price Lab, stuff like that. That's on our roadmap to see if we can integrate that Airbnb, you know, data onto our website as well. But generally, from number of likes, we have those top prefectures, the hot areas, and that's kind of what we're looking at as like maybe the best people are liking the most. But from an Airbnb perspective, we don't have that demand captured yet, but something we are looking at.
I guess this is for me. What's the usual fee and offers to outsource Airbnb management to Tokyo in Tokyo and surrounding rural Atami, Izu, Hakone, Karuizawa, and other areas, Chiba areas. It depends, and I think as I mentioned up in the breakout room, you can go with a cheaper property manager, say, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20, like, it varies. But if you just look at the percentage, yes, I'm going to squeeze, you know, the property manager for a couple of percentage points, but then overall, they're only going to be phoning it in. So they won't be doing the revenue management. They won't be doing listing optimization. They won't be actually making you more money in the long run. Sure, you might be able to say, oh, I've screwed my property manager down to 15% or 12% or whatever you've managed to do it, but you're not going to be making more money overall.
In our experience, not specifically in Tokyo, but a mix of places, it varies a lot depending on the company, but generally speaking, somewhere between 20 to 30% of the total income you get from guests. Some of them charge it like it'd be 20%, but also including the amount they pay for utilities and cleaning. In other cases, it'll be 30%, but pure rent. So you can assume somewhere between 20 to 30% usually.
Let's open it up to the floor, and then we'll jump on to these in a little bit. So any questions from the floor?
Wow, they suddenly gone shy. Oh,
hold on. Yeah. I can check.
Okay, so I have a question in regards to like kind of taxes and remodels. So let's say a company or a corporation like a GK, they buy a house and they remodel it. Is it possible to write off the remodel on taxes? Is that a thing in Japan?
I actually don't deal with taxes because that's not me. But usually if it's a company expense, you should be able, but not if it's a personal. Because if it's a personal and it's an older property, then you can only tax or deduct whatever is left on the value of the property. So it really depends, and in these cases, there's always better to consult actually a tax expert.
We'll not have
me.
An accountant.
I can
here
promise you anything, but it might not be true.
Daigo Sato-san, accountant, CPA, will be here tomorrow, so he can answer all of those questions in more detail.
I have something to add to that as well. It depends on what your receipt will say. If you're paying to the contractor, you can write it off right away. But if you're buying things like Setsubi, like an aircon or a TV and these kind of things, that depreciates over an amount of years. So it really depends on what kind of receipt your contractor is giving you. So if you just get a receipt that says, okay, 4 million yen for contractor work, you can deduct that. But if it's divided into different receipts, like it's going to be depreciating and you cannot, like you have to deduct it over a certain amount of years, depending on what you're buying and how you're upgrading your house.
And just one more thing, there's always a big misconception. I get that a lot when people buy their home, like a personal home, say, can I write this on? Can I write this off? Can I write that off? Generally, for personal homes, you cannot write it off. If you buy it for as a rental property, once it's an investment income-generating asset, then yes, different expenses can be written off. And whether or not they're written off in that calendar year or it becomes part of a capital work and it depreciates over several years, which the tax office assigned, that depends on the work that happens. But yeah, only if it's an income-generating asset at the outset can you start writing off these the capital work expenses.
Any more questions, folks? Yes.
Speaking about loans, not sure if this is something that's been covered before, but for an housing loan, you have the loan Genzei that's also possible. You could cover that a little bit?
Jutaku loan Kojo. If you have a home loan for your personal home, you can get a tax deduction. It used to, they've changed it last year and they changed it last year and they changed it the year before that. So the numbers have decreased from what you could borrow, sorry, from how much you get back. But essentially what that is, and if you Google like Jutaku Loan Kojo, if you have a home loan for a certain type of property, you can deduct up to, like depends now on the type of property, but basically you get a tax rebate of up to about 250,000 yen per year for 10 years. I think the most up until like maybe 3 years ago, if you bought a house, was 400,000 yen a year for 13 years. So that's like 5.2 million yen of tax credit you get. It's decreased now, and I think it's like 0.7% of the remaining loan balance with a cap of about 200,000 yen. Sorry, 200 or 250,000 yen. But the house that you purchase needs to meet some certain criteria. So now you hear about Zechi, Z-E-H, homes. So if it meets that particular requirement or it's a any certain type of energy efficient property.
Zero emission house is what it stands for. Yeah.
Those properties, then you get slightly more amount of tax credit. And that's just a discount off your annual tax. So whatever your income tax is, if you have to pay 800,000 yen tax at the end of this year, you get that credit down, and so you get 250,000 yen discount tax rebate off that. There are some calculators online. I think kakaku.com actually has a pretty good one where you put that and you write what your income is, if you have a spouse, etc., with the remaining loan balance, when you purchase the property, whether it meets this standard or that standard, etc., when the house was built, and it will tell you for the next 10 years what your expected amount is of tax rebate.
Is it Kakaku, the same people that give the...
Yeah, the price.com. Yeah, they do everything, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I love Kakaku.
Comparing air conditioning units across...
Yeah, they do credit cards, mortgages, internet, moving companies.
They're like Virgin Japan.
Yeah, so kakaku.com is, actually just in a bit of a side note, when all my clients who just bought a house, they need to go to big camera, they got to buy fridge, air conditioners, all that stuff. I tell them, go to kakaku.com, they have a barcode scanner. If you see a fridge that you like, scan the barcode, see what it comes up as the cheapest thing on kakaku.com and show the guy at big camera and say, can you match that? And they will try to match a heap of prices. So air conditioners, fridges, the big stuff, kakaku.com is your
that
friend.
That was the price of the admission ticket right there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And by the way, we haven't mentioned specifically because I only speak tomorrow, but if you got questions about investment properties anywhere in Japan, feel free to raise your hands as well.
Well, I know.
Let's jump back onto these while we wait for people to mull right. over.
So this is from the same person before. What are the risks to be careful when buying an Airbnb business in Tokyo and surrounding prefectures? I heard sometimes neighbourhoods might oppose and specific wards have specific rules, weekends, etc.
Was that specific about buying an existing business or setting up?
It just says if I buy something for Airbnb business. So, yes, I always say to people... do not spend any money until you've picked up the phone and made one phone call to the ward office to get the zoning to find out what is possible for that address. So don't buy something and then do it. So it should be all part of the due diligence that you do. It's a 5-minute phone call to the ward office to make sure that you can do and what the conditions are for running short-term rental or getting the license on that address. It's free information. They will give you a checklist of everything that you need to comply with before they'll give you a license, and you know 100% if you can tick all their boxes and you will get the license.
And if you're not physically in Japan or you don't speak the language or you just don't don't want to deal with it, then Shihoshoshis can find out for you. You can pay them a certain fee and they'll find out. There's a company called Smart Inn that we also cooperate with, who do remote management and research of Airbnb all over Japan. They will also, for 20,000 yen, they will research the local municipality, let you know if that property is likely to receive a license, and if not, what you, the very detailed report on a particular property that you want to dig into.
Can...
Shihoshoshi is a judicial scrivener. It's the equivalent in Japan of paralegal property lawyer, conveyancing lawyer. They do a bunch of stuff, but a lot of the stuff that they do is related to real estate.
And maybe actually just on that, maybe Anton can speak briefly about what are some of the rules or restrictions that an individual ward can impose that prevent, that, that limits Airbnb functionality. So when, you know, you hear about you need the right zoning when you buy Airbnb property, right? Or that's what this question refers to. So maybe Anton, you can sort of talk to that a little bit. What are some restrictions if you are in a certain zone versus another?
So it really depends on where you are within Tokyo, for example. Each ku has their own different rules. For example, Meguro-ku has the restriction of, even if you cannot get the hotel license and if it's only a minpaku, you can only operate it Fridays and Saturdays, for example. And I know Suginami-ku, Nakano-ku, Shibuya-ku used to have it, I think. Maybe not. Setagaya-ku has it as well. Setagaya-ku has 120 days a year, I think. And weekends only. So it really depends on where you are.
Location, location, location.
Also, like, I would... Yeah. But make sure you keep your neighbors happy, I think. I think that's the key point to take away from here.
So, yeah, so there's different zonings, different districts. So there's the big one that a lot of wards will use is restricted residential area. So, Jukyo Senyo Chiki. So, Senyo means restricted. So, like restricted residential area, those ones will have, on top of the regular, like country level, like federal regulated 180 day limit, they will say, oh, you can only do Friday, Saturday, like Friday check-in, Sunday check-out, right? Or Shibuya Ward, again, this was a few years ago when I was doing Airbnb. I had a dozen properties sort of at the peak. Shibuya Ward introduced the rule that only during school holidays. But this is only for if they are in the restricted residential area. If they're in sort of the Shotengai, a commercial district, or a just a Jukyo-chiki, a residential area, which is not restricted, then often it didn't fall into that category. So it's not just the ward, it's which actual zoning it is within the ward.
And usually 100 metres or so from a school or a hoikuan or a yochien as well. So, yeah, the only way is to, is don't waste your time, just get the address and call up the ward office and they'll tell you, you know, within 2 minutes what you can do, what you can't do.
The ward office has provided a really nice map.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's 800 yen to buy the map. And they redraw it every once a year, I think, as well. Yeah, and reprint it.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So this is not about Airbnb, but long-term renters. So Taka and I purchased a property in Kita, Kyushu, and we just closed on it yesterday. We're planning to get...
Woo!
Thank you. Planning to get a long-term renter. Ziv, we have no idea how to go about getting a renter. Could you explain the best way to do this? We heard something about a guarantor company that maybe just handles everything. Could you speak to that?
Sure. So the first thing to do is talk to Ziv before you buy in Kita, Kyushu, because it's a declining population and a blue-collar town and a lot of crime. So, like, you picked one of the worst possible spots.
Right in.
They do that though, like they pay a house without inspecting. Yeah, adventurous, let's try this, let's try that. They're amazing. So normally what you would do is you would enlist a local Chintai Kanri property, normal property manager, who are the ones who handle long-term leases. You would advertise the property in conjunction with their advice. They would tell you what the average comparable rents in the area are, and they'll base the asking price on that. They'll run it in all of the major property websites for you and try to recruit a tenant and collect the rent from them. And I wouldn't try to do it yourselves. I don't think you need a specific license for it unless you're actually drawing the lease between the tenant. You can hire somebody for that. But normal Japanese tenants, which are most of your long-term tenants, would freak out dealing directly with a foreigner. So you definitely want to hire a Chintai Kanri for that.
So we're looking for something hands-off. It sounds like it's quite hands-off once you've employed this company to handle it for you.
It is, but if and when your tenant moves, I mean, eventually a tenant will move out, or if they're elderly, they might just move to a nursing home or pass away in the property, even whatever the case may be. When the property becomes vacant, you'll have a lot of interaction with them, and sometimes a large part of our work is recognizing after a few months they're not doing a very good job and replacing them with another one. But hopefully that'll only happen every 2, 3, 4, 5 years, so it is pretty hands-off, yeah. The average, the industry average, they're not regulated, so the industry average is 5% plus tax. How much do property managers charge? Not mandated, but the industry average is 5% plus tax, so 5.5. If it's a building, they'll usually charge less, 3 or 4%. If they've got a lot of properties under management for the same person or company, then they'll also give you a discount. In some areas, like Shikoku, for example, for some reason, I'm not sure, maybe there are just not many of them there, they charge 10%. So 8 and 10% are not that uncommon, but the industry standard is usually 5%. The person who is drawing the lease, the tenancy lease in front of the tenant, needs to be a licensed taken, needs to actually have a real estate license. But property management companies, a lot of the time, will just hire somebody to come in and do that for them. So they don't need a license beyond that. As far as I'm aware, I could be wrong, though. No, there's no, anyone can rent out any property. Some owner unions, especially in holiday resorts, are very opposed to that. They'll give you a very hard time. And generally speaking, in those locations, unless they're open to it, people wouldn't be renting out just because they don't want to deal with the hassle. But legally, nobody can prohibit you from long-term standard leasing out any property or a room in the property which you own.
What is long-term?
A month plus, done with at least a single page kind of tenancy lease in place that both parties have signed.
Last part on that. What do I Google for? Jintai Chi?
Chintai Kanri. Chintai Kanri Gaisha.
Arigato.
Yeah, you're also
one. Oh, nice. Yeah. So, another question, and this might be better for tomorrow, but we can all weigh in now. Starting a business in Japan, placing existing properties under business to use as collateral for investment loans.
That can be answered very easily. There is no such thing as using properties as collateral for investment loans in Japan. However, if it is a business loan, and both Alicia and Emil can elaborate on that, I think they might be judged based on the projected income from the investment, or I'm not sure how that works exactly, but not a straight out collateral of the property value itself.
To add on that, I've done that. Added
collateral?
Yeah. Yeah, so they put a kyo tampo. So like the new loan, I got 100% financing for a new property if I put the other one as a collateral.
Well, there you go. I did not know that.
Is that private or corporate?
That was private.
Okay, so in your name.
In my name, yeah.
In your name, not your company name.
That was an investment loan, though, to a higher percentage. I think I paid 3.5%.
Yeah.
But it wasn't for an investment purpose, yeah.
So
what do you mean increased?
The post-renovated cost is what he means.
Post-renovated.
Yeah.
Oh, so they basically baked the value of both properties in, because the first one was paid in cash. And I think that's important to tell to the story.
Wait.
No, tell me more.
So basically for the value of the property, the property for the bank doesn't really have a value. It's what they're looking at as the land value, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of valuations from banks for these older properties is like, okay, it doesn't matter how much you've renovated it, they're not really going to value that so much. They'll look at just the land value, and they'll give you a small percentage. You know, I don't have experience with that. And I think, you know, it's not so common with the mega banks when I do typical home loans. But I think if you go to more regional banks, the Chihuahua Ginko and stuff like that, possibly each branch might be a bit more flexible in what they do. So it's not common, but as Anton mentioned, it's something that he's done himself.
But this is all about the connection with the banks. Like, I could go to the same bank 5 times, and 4 times it's a no, but the 5th time the guy likes me and he'll give me a loan.
But I'm amazed that it's even an option, because we keep hearing that, you know, there is no leveraging the equity of your property for further loans, but that's the first I've heard that it's actually done.
Congratulations.
Understand, so only the property titled free and clear can get another loan on top of that. And what type of property did you have as a collateral? Is that a single family or multifamily? Or
this was a mansion in Tokyo.
So it's like a kuban.
It's my Kuban mansion.
Okay.
So like a normal co-op, basically, right?
Okay.
I can't believe you own one of those.
Yeah, me neither. You don't. I do.
Is it in the major station?
Yeah, it's close to Shibuya.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's why, yeah.
Which bank?
So this was SMBC.
Okay. Yeah,
and I was surprised about the evaluation myself, because I just wrote a number and they said, okay. And then they gave me this.
What's
the
loan?
Do you
have to walk in there and may I ask, what's the loan-to-value ratio that they gave it to you? Because you own 100% free and clear, and what's the percentage of loan that they gave it to you based on the collateral property?
100%. But I paid a higher interest rate as well. I paid about 3.5%. But still, I didn't think it was going to go through until I got the keys. I thought that was a joke all the time. Until, actually, okay, well, we worked.
And what did they ask you as far as complying went? Like, did they ask you about what you're earning, what kind of job you're doing? Did they check your tax returns? What was the compliance process like?
At that point, I was pretty new to Japan, so I wasn't a YouTuber back then, sorry.
When you got that?
When I got that, yeah. So I didn't even pay taxes in Japan at that time. I was a resident of Japan. I bought my first property in Japan, and this was right before COVID hit. And I think maybe the bank was they were desperate in like lending.
Starstruck,
people.
I'd say.
Bravo. No, because people keep asking about it and we keep telling them no, yeah. It doesn't exist.
It's true.
I think the key is to buy something that you can get. I think I was lucky in a part, but to buy something that actually has a value to the bank, and then you put that as a collateral, and then they trust you because you already own real estate that has a taxation value, and then you can put that up as a collateral.
That's an important point. So that's you bringing new collateral. It's not the property you're getting a loan for. You're bringing an existing collateral and say, hey, take that.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think it was the broker's connections as well probably helped a lot.
Do you see the yen falling and less renters? And what about asbestos checking for Akia?
Asbestos checking for Akia sits over there.
Do you go in by yourself like a Godiva dog or something?
It's an easy solution. Just hire an inspector. It's usually between 50,000 and 80,000 yen. In really rural areas, it goes down to about 30,000, but get an inspector. They'll do everything for you, including, I'd say probably be pretty open with, hey, also check for asbestos. But yeah, they can run that check really easy.
I think in every case, it's like, you know, yes, you're getting a cheaper property, but don't try and be really cheap and not do your due diligence or pay professionals to do all of that. Yeah.
You can also order kits and take samples on your own. It's really easy. You just order from, I forgot the website, but and then you just send it in, and then they give you like a result as well. In my Nakano house, I had, when I ripped open the walls, on the insulation it said, Nihon Asbesto Kabushiki Gaisha, in big letters. And I was so scared about them actually containing asbestos, but in the end they didn't.
The checks, I have to say, can get expensive, so it's an easy enough process, but depending on the structure of the house, they need to grab a bunch of samples from a lot of places that could contain it. So it can come up to a few thousand dollars. But again, if you're planning to demolish and or rebuild and or do serious renovations, you probably want to get that checked. What was the first part of that question, sir?
Do people see the yen falling further and the number of rent, like people wanting to rent also dropping? Like, where's the economy going?
That's a little bit over our pay grade.
But, you know, the yen, we have no idea.
But in terms of the renters dropping, that so, Ziv, you know, I think the population of, like, you're more closely looking at the population growth and changes in different cities. So I think in terms of renter numbers, cities that are growing, I know Tokyo is definitely one of them where population is growing. You know, when the cities are dying elsewhere, it's because the people are moving into the major cities, including Tokyo. So renting demand is increasing, I think, in Tokyo. But
yeah,
you know that as well. Like, what are other cities?
Yeah, so most major metropolitan centers in Japan are gaining in population. As of 2020, which is the last population census that was released, it will be interesting to see the one that's released next year. They do it every 5 years because COVID has pushed some people, not to the extent that it is overseas, but there has been movement out of Tokyo, out of Osaka. So it'll be interesting to see what that did to the smaller towns. But as of 2020, most major metropolitan centers in Japan have been growing in population. I've learned just last week from somebody who does even deeper research than me that Kobe, which was one of the cities that we were recommending, has actually gone stagnant. I thought it was one of the more popular locations in Japan, but that's not. But Tokyo, depending on the city, Yokohama, Sapporo, Kyoto, Nagoya, Fukuoka, Osaka are all generally gaining in population. But even within those cities, it's mostly the central wards that are normally gaining. So it's not just a matter of which city you pick. Definitely that's the first thing. But even if you've picked a city that's growing in population, you need to make sure that you're in an attractive location because some wards are dying out. Same as some of the rural villages are. Beyond that, whether the population decline in Japan will continue, slow down, escalate, will they let more immigrants in, will they finally do something to help moms want to actually have more children or families want to have more children is unfortunately anyone's guess. I'd like to think that Japan will wake up before it's really in danger of losing significant parts of its workforce, but that's again over our pay grade.
When you talk about areas that are growing in population, would this be more because of the foreign migrants?
Not foreign migrants, internal migration. So as the smaller foreign migrants are a thing in particular locations,
yes,
that have... Yeah, like, but generally, as smaller townships die out, the people who are getting less and less infrastructures and support, they're like, you know, the hospitals are not as easy to get to and the bus only runs 2-3 times a day. The people who need to will start moving into the bigger cities, and that's what's been happening for the last 12-13 years, and I think will continue for at least another decade or two, and beyond that I hope they'll find some deeper solutions.
More local Japanese than foreign migrants.
Yes.
It's like if you think in like the countryside, young Japanese, they come to Tokyo or to university and they start working here, they're not going back there for work. So that's kind of one part of the migration that you see.
Unless Matt has his way, he's working on that. We'll hear from him tomorrow.
Hello?
Oh, there we go.
Going back to on long-term rent, I've heard that some cases that tenant, if they don't want to move out, they have a legal right to stay. And sometimes that creates a lot of issues because you cannot sell it and then it cannot move. They pay, but there are apparently some protection laws, which is disadvantage to the owner.
Yes, so essentially tenancy laws in Japan are very tenant-oriented. The reason for that is because in Japan, the vast majority of the population are pretty docile, and the people who were landlords in the past were more investor economically savvy, and they took advantage of the tenants in nasty ways. I mean, the thank you fee, the reikin, is a remnant of that. There was people who used to, you know, bring in a tenant, charge them all of the fees, reikin, chikikin, kore, 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 and then kick them out after 6 months and start the whole process again with a new tenant, and that had to stop. So they have changed the legislation. I'm not sure exactly when, but it's very tenant-oriented now. In principle, most Japanese tenants would not insist on staying. So if you notify them by law 6 months before the lease expires that you're raising the rent or you're terminating the lease because you need to use the property for whatever purpose, most of them will not create an issue. But number one, to be fair to them, it costs a lot of money to move in Japan. So we would normally advise our customers who do that to offer them somewhere between 6 to 10 months of rent in compensation for not renewing the lease, which is what it's going to cost them to move. It's not like a made-up number. And also, to try and alleviate the risk of one of them, again, it's going to be very rare in Japan that somebody will actually do that, but if you've got an elderly gentleman, usually the men with a bit of extra time on their hands, the type of people who keep complaining to the property managers about stuff all the time, they might decide to make something of it. If you have a foreigner, not the type of low-income foreigners like students and convenience store, but I mean, Western or first world country foreigner who's more aware of their rights, they could definitely insist to stay. The courts will eventually approve the right to not, they might say, okay, you have to let them stay there for another one more lease, which is 2 years, and then you can take it back because they weren't ready for it. But eventually you will be able to claim the property back, but they will similarly, it'll obviously cost you a lot in legal fees and a lot of your time in court representations. It's better to just offer them a nice compensation and ask them to vacate. But if you're buying a property that already has a tenant in there, if the goal is to terminate the lease as soon as you can, I wouldn't go that way. I'd buy a vacant property. It's too much of a hassle.
I just want to... So there's a guy at the back there who'd like to grab the mic, but while...
And we've got 5 minutes, so the last 2 or 3 questions. Yeah.
So I'll just be real quick in addition to that. You did mention, like, the phrasing at the start, I think it's the Western perspective is, I want to buy it, but I can't evict the tenant. Or I want to sell it, I can't evict the tenant. So in Japan, there's owner change properties. So when it's tenanted, assume it's there for life. You may never be able to get them out. We do some owner change properties where... you know, an investor wants to buy a property and it is just the tenant currently lives there. You cannot inspect the property. You cannot see inside. This is the monthly rent. This is what it's going to be forever. The property is priced based on that rent. And that's just a deal you can go into. So the Western mindset thinks, oh, I'm stuck in this situation. Whereas the Japanese mindset is, oh, this is just an investment tool.
Stable.
Yeah. Stable, this is the rental yield. If they leave, I'm going to replace a tenant and get a similar yield. Don't come in thinking, oh, I'm going to kick him out and this is going to be my house. When I leave, I can bring someone in for a little bit. And then when I want to come back here on a holiday, I'm going to evict them and be there for a month. That's not the case. So I think just the approach is different. But I don't think in Japan, with my properties that I've got rented out, I don't feel sour or sort of undone as a landlord that I've got someone who I cannot evict. I'm happy, please stay there forever. You know, just that's it.
Think of it as buying a building, like a used building. Like it's going to be tenanted and you're not going to kick them out. But they might move out and you might need to find a new tenant. Or if the unit opens up, you can use it.
We've got a customer now who has a small building like that and he wants to experiment with Airbnb. So what he's doing is waiting for a unit to become vacant, turn that one into Airbnb, and the presence of guests coming in and out of there like might kind of convince the rest of the tenants not to renew.
Yeah, you write a letter as a courtesy letter to all the tenants and say...
Hey, there's going
to
be foreigners coming in.
Well, by the way, we want to let you know that, you know, this unit is going to be turned into a minpaku and just... You know, we're letting you all know. People tend to move on their own. But, you know, if they don't, they don't. So
cheaper than hiring Yakuza to come and break the door.
We have a question up the back.
Hi, guys. Thank you for today. I want to go back to the Akia. How much details do you get, like, access to the buildings to inspect them before you decide to buy it, like, can you go in and get under the floor, check for the termites, the asbestos, like you mentioned, or do you just go in like blind? Just,
do you mean on your own or with an official inspection company?
Just for yourself, like as an individual to buy one.
You can get access. I think you can get access to it. I've never paid for an inspection on my own. I would check under the house, check the structure, check that there's no tilting, check for water leaks. But when it comes to Akyas, to make good deals, like as a rule of thumb, you should make it easy for the seller to just hand the building over to you. Right. You don't want to ask them any hard questions.
Yeah,
you don't want to step on their toes. You just want it to be like an easy sale. But if you have no experience, it might be better to hire an inspector to check it out for you.
I think the term Akia is a bit confusing, and people use it in different kinds of ways. Like the vast majority of our customers, not count you bought like a real Akia, but the vast majority of our customers who are buying properties for, let's say, 8, 9 to 15, 20 million yen that are move-in ready and are maybe built 20, 30 years ago, like in good shape, those are Akias too, right? The official definition of Akia is a house that's not being lived in. So there's a huge gamut that Matt and Anton and Akia Mart guys and our customers deal in. They're all called Akia, but they're very different properties.
Thank you.
Matt, He still has an answer to this excellent question.
Are you talking about visitations specifically? Was that part of the question? Like getting into the property? Yeah, right. So you need to be extremely careful about that. As everybody probably here knows, like there's real estate anywhere, but especially in Japan, is like very much based on trust. And I've heard a number of stories with rural, or at least not downtown or metro area agents who are aware that there's something going on with Akia, but like, don't know what it is, but they kind of want to get in on it. And so they've set up visitations for people who are like marginally interested, but
like
not
open house.
No, not an open, like setting up the visitation, like actually scheduling and calling the seller's agent and all of that stuff. And they didn't really run their due diligence on the potential buyer, right? And they also didn't communicate to the buyer how serious kind of a commitment a visitation actually is. If you just kind of don't show up, that actually reflects extremely badly on the buyer's rep who set up the visitation for you. And now the seller's agent doesn't like that buyer's agent, right? And so for people who want to get, especially with, you know, Akia, right? A lot of folks are just kind of marginally interested and not all that serious about it, but the actual setting up of that visitation is a very serious matter amongst the representatives. And there's a big miscommunication amongst potential buyers and the actual professionals who are managing this stuff that still isn't really being understood. And so basically what I'm trying to get at is if you schedule a visitation, I don't care if it's a 1 yen house, I don't care if it's Ichigokuin, commit.
Take it seriously,
because otherwise you're really screwing up somebody's business, right?
And the image of all foreigners.
Don't ask for that if you are only window shopping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sorry, and
to kind of add on, Anton nailed it. So in the past year, Joey and I have bought 4 quote-unquote Akias. We've gotten a home inspection or building inspection on one, which has been very, very thorough. You don't always have the time or luxury. There's sometimes competition. So one of our properties in Tama, we didn't have time because of competition. And the last 2, I guess, Akias we bought, we tried to just make it smooth as possible for the owner. They just said, hey, this is the cheaper price. We just want you to take it. So making it easier for them, I think, is very helpful. So kind of knowing the situation and trying to understand the context can kind of lead you, do I have time for a home inspection or should I just go for it as is?
So
do
you want to end at dinner?
Yeah, last question on that dinner. But we're here all week now. We're here tomorrow.
There's one more on here. Do you want to just read that up?
How to maximize your chance of getting a loan, especially if you are over 50?
Okay, so I presume it's a home loan that they're talking about, typical mortgage. I mentioned earlier in my presentation, the bank wants you to pay off the loan by your 80th birthday. So if you're 50, then they're going to give you a 29-year loan term. Usually around 50, they're not, like, it's still just based on your income assessment. Maybe when you're closer to 55 and above, they're like, oh, you've only got about 10 years left until retirement. That's when they'll start looking at, look, what other assets do you have? So when you retire, how would you, how can you pay for it? Or how can you continue paying for the mortgage? Or are you able to pay the mortgage off? Or able to continue, like maybe sell some assets and able to continue paying off the mortgage? If you're still like, you know, 50 or in your 40s, they don't have to worry about the discussion for another 20 years, 25 years. So they're not worried about it. But once you get to like closer to 55 and above, the banks will ask, what other assets do you have in terms of pension, Tai Shokakin, like when you retire, your company will dish out some funds, or just other stock or assets you may have. You don't need to, when you turn 60 or 80 or whatever, you don't need to pay off the loan. They just want to know, because you're closer to retirement, do you have funds to maintain the payment after retirement? And that's about it.